We're featuring interviews from our archives with leaders of the great big bands. Woody Herman was an accomplished clarinet and saxophone player, but his greatest achievement was as a band leader, directing innovative soloists and arrangers. That's Woodchopper's Ball, the record which the Woody Herman Band first became known for. Herman organized his first band in 1937, during the height of the big band era, and kept together his band, the Thundering Herd, long after that era ended. He stayed on the road until failing health made travel impossible. Herman died of congestive heart failure, emphysema, and pneumonia in 1987 at the age of 74. I spoke with him in 1986, when he was still on the road. He told me that he started his long performing career as a child in vaudeville.
I was a song and dance kid. And then with the money I made from the first or second road tour, I've forgotten, I got my first saxophone and then later a clarinet and started to study with local teachers in Milwaukee.
Had you heard jazz then?
No, I didn't hear jazz really or become aware of it until I got into the teenage stage of life. But when I announced to my mother and father that I was no longer in showbiz and that I was leaving it forever and I was about to embark on a jazz musician's career, I think they both went into a dead faint because as long as I was in the theater, that seemed safe to them. But being a jazz musician, just like the word jazz, was thought of as a very bad, dirty kind of thing.
This is amazing. First of all, so many parents wouldn't want their kids in showbiz because they think that was unsafe.
Yes.
And then your parents didn't want you in jazz. So
I think everybody has a different concept of what success is.
You've said that you've never thought of yourself as a great clarinetist. How do you feel about the instrument?
I don't like the instrument. I don't think I ever did. I think it's a very difficult, too difficult instrument to express yourself properly.
If you dislike the clarinet so much, how come you played it? Because you also were a saxophonist.
Well, it was the American boys' instrument in the 30s and 40s. You know, it was if you didn't have a clarinet and stood in front of the band, well, what are you there for? It was almost at that point.
There's a lot of musicians that really got started in your band. And just to tick off a few, Stan Getz, Al Cohn, Zoot Sims, Jimmy Giuffre.
Right. The Four Brothers were some of the people that later came on the scene.
What do you look for? How do you audition someone? Let's start with the 30s and 40s. How did you then go about finding people?
Then it was really less difficult if there was somebody that you really liked, and if they were working for someone else, you try to get them to join your band because you were trying to play new things and probably more musical things. And those that wanted to progress joined us, and I think that was a big come on as far as guys were concerned.
The band that you led in the 30s and the early 40s, mm-hmm. you described as a cooperative band that was an offshoot of the Isham Jones Band. What was the first band that you really thought of as being yours?
Well, let me tell you why that band was changed, and there was a kind of a different kind of evolution took place, but it was because of wartime. And as people were drafted out and went into the service, we had to get different kind of people or new people or people who we thought would work for us. And then I decided that it was now my sole responsibility and I wanted to do more progressive music than we were doing in the earliest days. And I wanted to improve. I wanted the band to improve and be one that could play all kinds of music and do it well.
Another thing that made that band unique was that it was a big band that was playing harmonies and rhythms that came out of bop, And I right. think a lot of the big bands really were resisting that.
Yeah, they weren't
that.
Interested, and I was. So, as a matter of fact, our whole band, shortly before we went into the second herd, if you want to call it that, the Four Brothers herd, I had insisted that our whole band, that we would go to hear Charlie Parker at his opening on 52nd Street with Dizzy and a few of our friends, because Dizzy was already writing for our band.
Was it hard to figure out how to incorporate the rhythmic and harmonic innovations of bop into a big band setting?
Well, I think you had to have imagination, and I think that you... in other words, there's two kinds of music, as Ellington said many times, and certainly Stravinsky said it to me personally. Two kinds of music, good and bad, and we were definitely trying to play good.
Second Herd, which was your second band, you organized that in 46 or 47.
47.
And this was just about the time that a lot of the big bands were
That's
starting to
That's when
fold.
They all disappeared, yeah.
Yeah, so you were really going against the tide then by organizing a big band. Yeah.
Well, everybody left except Ellington, Basie, and maybe Harry James. And everyone else just took a run for it, and mostly. And...
Was it hard to keep the bands going? Is that why so many of them disappeared?
Yeah, well, financially it was a bust. It was no longer a business. It was now a hobby, and if you could afford it, you did it.
How were you able to do it?
Because I made it a hobby. And I've suffered the consequences ever since, you know. I got into trouble later with the IRS, and I'm still in trouble with them at this late date.
You once said that what would have made the best financial sense would have been after 1946 or so to take your money and invest it, not invest it in a band,
but
invest it.
Yeah, oh, of course, yeah.
But obviously you've put music first.
Well, it's been above everything in my lifetime, so sometimes it's been a disservice to me as a person. But that's beside the point, because I still have that love and affection for music. And I'm still alive, I think, because of my love for music. And the Lord has been kind to me. Let's look at it that way.
Woody Herman recruited in 1986. He died the following year at the age of 74. This spring, his autobiography, Woodchopper's Ball, was republished by Limelight Editions. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.